Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. It's been an arduous journey to Wisconsin for the great violinist and educator Itzhak Perlman. Perlman will play a concert Saturday evening in Kohler as part of the Kohler Foundation's Distinguished Guest Series. Earlier this week, though, his travel made international news, the result of an incident in Toronto. Perlman had polio as a child and uses a motorized scooter to get around airports, but an Air Canada employee who was supposed to be assisting him refused to carry Perlman's luggage and essentially abandoned him in the airport. The airline has since apologized for the incident. Fortunately, the focus will be on music this weekend and an opportunity to see and hear one of the world's great players. Perlman played at Barack Obama's inauguration, for Queen Elizabeth's visit to the White House in 2007, and has been on everything from the Academy Awards to Sesame Street to hundreds and hundreds of stages around the world. And he's also won 15 Grammy Awards. We reached him in Bloomington, Indiana, ahead of Saturday's performance in Kohler. Itzhak Perlman, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We're at a point when we read an article about you and your music, you're not just referred to often as a musician, but as a musical ambassador. And I wonder if that's a description that you welcome.
Well, I don't know what that means. You know, I guess if it's a positive thing, then I'm happy. You know, I mean, ambassador can mean all sorts of things. It can mean somebody who's playing all over the world and brings their music. Well, I guess I am. You know, I'm playing all over the world. So that's if it means somebody who teaches and brings music to you know, to youngsters with talent, then maybe that's me as well, and so on. So it depends what you think that is. You know, but I'm fine with it.
Well, and it struck me that simply anyone who plays music in some way is an ambassador, because without an audience, there isn't music, but the audience is part and parcel of the equation.
Absolutely, that's totally correct. So whatever I can do to express my musical ideas and my musical feelings through performance for an audience, that's my job.
When did education become part of what was important to you in your musical life?
You mean teaching?
Exactly.
Well, quite early. I think I've been teaching maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 years probably that I've been teaching somewhere, somehow. I started I think I was probably in my early 30s when I actually started to teach seriously. And then one thing led to another, and 20 years ago, my wife started the Perlman Music Program, which is a program that caters to very talented youngsters, you know, who are string players. So I teach there. I teach at the Juilliard School for quite a few years. You know, I always repeat myself when somebody asks me these questions. I tell my students that they should never miss an opportunity to teach. Because if you teach somebody else, you actually teach yourself as well. So it's a win-win situation.
Do you find that even after 30 or 40 years, do you find you are still learning something yourself when you teach a young person?
All the time. You know, I mean, you know, in other words, I learn how to listen. And, you know, and I listen to, you know, when you listen to somebody who is talented, then, you know, your brain has to be quite imaginative as to how you help them and so on. So that kind of imagination that you need is exactly what you need to be, you know, to continue to be a good musician and to continue to be a successful musician and so on. But I mean by successful, I don't mean successful business, but I mean a successful musician and the fact that successfully you can really relay your ideas to an audience, keep your playing spontaneous, even though you've been doing the same piece, let's say, year after year. You know, what can you do with a Beethoven violin concerto today that you haven't done 30 years ago? And so on. That's always a great challenge, but I feel personally that, you know, I'm continuing to enjoy what I do, and I'm continuing to enjoy pieces that I've been playing for many years. and that I see something new in those pieces all the time. And that's for me is it's a successful situation.
You mentioned as an educator, one of the things that you are learning is learning to listen. I wonder, even for people who aren't necessarily interested in music for their potential as musicians, is there some learning to listen we can all do when it comes to appreciating music?
Well, look, the important thing is that if let's say that you are a person who may would like to start listening to some of this quote classical music stuff, you know. Well, it's very, very simple. You get something, you get a recording of whatever you're curious about. And, you know, it's a question of repetition. It's a question of having your brain be familiar with a style, familiar with what goes on, you know. And it's a question of just keep repeating, you know. The thing is that it's just with everything else, you know. It's in the repetition that you get to know whether you like something or not. But, you know, just going to a concert once and saying, well, I liked it or I hated it, you know, you can do much more than that in order to appreciate it. And you can actually get hooked. People have been known to get hooked on classical music.
I am aware of that, actually.
Yeah.
In August, I think it is, you're doing something that I don't know that you've done before. There's a retreat you're hosting in upstate New York, Saratoga Springs.
Yes.
What was the inspiration behind that retreat, and how does it fit in with the other kinds of educational experiences you've undertaken?
The retreat, when you know, people ask me to do it, it's a dream catcher kind of a situation where people come and you know, I speak to them about what I do, what my experiences with music is. You know, we're going to have people from the Perlman Music Program talk about chamber music, involve the audience in the process and just have a wonderful time. You know, it's like getting into the makings of what goes on backstage, what goes on. For example, I'm going to be conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra during those 3-4 days, where the audience will be there during the rehearsal and then they will come to the concert and so on. So it's sort of the inner, you know, machinations of what goes on musically and what goes on with me as a performer. So I'm looking forward to it because I personally am going to have a good time. So hopefully everybody else will as well.
It sounds like there's some demystifying that's going to take place.
Maybe, who knows? Maybe it'll be worse, actually.
People come out just scratching their heads.
Oh my God, what was that all about? Yeah.
In the more immediate future, you are playing in Kohler, Wisconsin this weekend as part of its Distinguished Artist Series. What can you tell us about what you're playing that day?
What am I playing? I'm playing a Beethoven sonata, and I think I'm doing Strauss sonata, a beautiful, beautiful piece, and Debussy. It's going to be, and then I'm going to do some bonbons, you know, virtuoso little pieces, old-fashioned violin pieces that, you know, old fiddle players used to play, and I always include those in my recitals, you know, for variety and so on. So it's going to be good, I hope.
Or again, people might come out scratching their heads.
What was that all about? Yeah.
Aside from the occasional snafu on the road, such as has been reported a lot this week, is the road still playing concerts an energizing part of what you do for you?
Well, the part of traveling is really not good. I mean, that's you know, even without that little snafu, it's still a challenge. You know, it's very difficult these days, you know, with all the things that go on with the checking at the checkpoint and so on. You know, I have to go through things like people checking me, you know, touching me and so on and so forth, because I cannot go through the X-ray door.
Right.
So they have to do it manually. So that's not very, very pleasant, you know, and just I have to sort of swallow hard and let them just do it. Otherwise, I'll miss my flight. So that part is really horrible. I don't like it. But the part of going on stage and playing, that's still wonderful, you know. And that's, you know, once I forget about the travel part, you know, then the playing on stage is certainly not something that I'm tired of. On the contrary, I'm enjoying it more and more.
I had one other area I was hoping to ask you about that I hope you don't mind. There's an article some time ago, I think, that in which you've described your life with synesthesia. And I'm just curious if you are able to share with us how it impacts what you do as a musician.
Well, I don't take it that seriously. You know, I just find it fascinating that, you know, when I hear notes, you know, I see certain colors for the notes. You know, I define them by certain colors. But then I also define those notes by certain tastes or by certain, you know, I mean, even though when I talk about a particular sound, you know, I like to always talk about that, comparing it to, you know, yogurt, or as opposed to ice cream, you know, something rich like a chocolate fudge. You know, I like to do that. So I don't know what you call that when you see taste in notes as opposed to seeing colors in notes and so on. But, you know, I look, music is all about, an important part of music is the colors that you say, the actual colors of the sound. So, you know, it's all involved. So I don't know whether that helps me or doesn't help me, but it's always nice to think about it and to be imaginative as to what kind of colors you can produce when you perform, when you play.
Well, and I was wondering if it made it easier in any way to internalize the music, that it was more than just black and white notes on a staff, that it also had these bigger meanings for you.
Well, no, it's not black and white notes at all on staff. You know, and once you get it in your ear, it's all what you hear. It's all what you hear, and it's all what you feel about what you're hearing. You know, the inevitability of playing a phrase a certain way, you know, and just making it sound the way you feel about it. It's something that you can't, you know, it's like I've got to do it that way. You know, that there's no other way for me to do this kind of a phrase. That's what it's all about, you know. And to do that at that moment, you know, because then the next day, if you play the same thing, you'll do something else.
Well, that would seem to make it all worthwhile, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, Itzhak Perlman, it has been a delight chatting with you. I wish you safe travels, and thank you so much for spending some time with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Violinist, conductor, and educator Itzhak Perlman will play a concert tomorrow evening at the Kohler Memorial Theater as part of the Kohler Foundation's Distinguished Guest Series. He also has a Sunday afternoon recital at Chicago's Lyric Opera. With that, we close another week's worth of Lake Effect. A lot of maladies running through the Lake Effect bungalow this week. Fortunately, our staff of Dan Harmon and Stephanie Lecce are ambulatory, and Bonnie North should feel fortunate that she's managed to avoid the germs around her desk. Not so Dan Harmon's computer. We are glad it's on the mend, and especially glad it wasn't a virus. We get production assistance from Eleanor Peterson, web support from Michelle Maternowski, and studio engineering from John Strelecki. I'm Mitch Teich. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you'll be with us on Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock. Thank you.